Fam, the interview you're about to hear is from my pal Eric Rocha. He is a stand-up comedian. He's a friend of mine that does stand-up, and he has a podcast called Behind the Cork, where he interviews other comics around the area. You know, those are the little bit lower echelon of the comics, not like your fucking Bill Burrs or your Louis fucking CKs, but like your Luke Allens, you know, people like this. He's a good interviewer. I like his podcast a lot. My only beef with this is he never uploads any goddamn episodes. So he said, you know what, man? I want to fucking interview you for the next episode. I want to fucking interview you, you piece of shit. And I said, okay. Okay. Oh, so we did it, and it was fun. And he's a good man, and I'm a fan of his. And he's a funny SOB, a nice guy, Mr. Eric Rocha. So this is him talking about me. Talking to me about me, interviewing me, and figuring out what the fuck is wrong with me, which is a lot. So here's this. This is part one. My schedule is really effed up for the next week because my mom's coming out. So I'll throw this up for now. It's a joint venture between Live from the 405 and Behind the Cork, his other podcast. Subscribe to the goddamn thing. This is like that G.I. Joe episode where I crossed over with Transformers. Remember? That was so epic. And the only one I ever knew that saw it, of course, was Bokes, who also had every cool exclusive toy that I wanted and never had. And I went over his house, and the first time I ever went there was just a treasure trove of awesome, like, he's that kid that sent in for every, like, serial UPC code of, like, get the, like, refrigerator Perry fucking G.I. Joe. He was that dude. Like, he put in the work and got every exclusive awesome toy that you're like, I want that. But it was, like, $5 and you had to mail something, and that was not happening with, like, 9-year-old you. That was way too much fucking work. No, thank you. I already had homework to do. Cereal, but Bogues did it, and then he had it. I was like, God damn you, you productive little shit. Anyways, this is the episode. I hope you like it. If you don't, well, I hope you sit on a thumbtack, to be quite honest.
to most people, sugar and I'm gonna put the anal in an analogy.
The right amount of silence.
Yep, I'm used to that.
All right, so this is actually a joint venture, believe it or not, with Live from the 405 and Behind the Cork. You got the two hosts. I'm Eric Rocha. How's everybody doing? And with good, me is good. With me is my friend Luke Allen from Live from the 405. What's up, Luke?
Hi, man. How's it going? This is Luke. What's that Dana Gould podcast? This is the sound of my voice.
Oh, God.
Did you listen to that show?
No.
It's all right. It's really produced.
You listen to a lot of podcasts.
That's all I listen to.
So primarily this interview is really going to be me interviewing Luke, because I've been wanting to get him on the Behind the Cork, my show, but I really just kind of fucking fell off the map with it.
I know. So. I always unsubscribe to it just because I know you never, like, I check on it all the time. But, like, anyone that doesn't, like, upload or something, I stop, like, listening, and I always check them. Like, is anybody on there? And there's still that goddamn Jay Light interview from, like, September.
There it is. I lost one of my subscribers. That's what happens, though, when you fall off the map.
I want to exactly. I'm trying to inspire you to, like, do it again.
Can I win you back, though?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm waiting. It's like a fucking, it was like when I was waiting for the Eagles to get back together kind of thing.
Oh, God, I hope
that was
not.
A shitty analogy. See?
Have you ever seen the Eagle?
No, but I it's been a long day, and I hate the fucking Eagles, man.
That's my fucking point.
I hate them, but that documentary was awesome. It was like 3 hours long.
I love that they showed, was it Glenn Frey and fucking Don Felder, like,
when they were fighting?
I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, I'm
going to
kick your fucking ass.
Set, buddy. Oh, I can't wait till the show is over, buddy.
That was great.
So anyways, where are you from originally?
My dad's bald. Ha! Ha! Boo. No, I'm from Buffalo, upstate New York, Buffalo. Because I have to say that because everyone that doesn't know thinks Buffalo is down next to New York City. They always say that.
I was going
to
say, how far away? Because everybody says that.
It's like exactly as far as San Fran is from here. It's like 6 hours. 6 hour drive, like hour flight, not even.
How often would you make it into the city?
I've been there 4 times in my life.
Total?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Why?
It's far. Far. I never had anyone to go with either. A lot of the times, I could never get anyone to like go with me and go. It was stupid.
Okay. Was your dad funny?
Yeah, he wasn't like so much joke. He was like, yeah, he was smart ass funny.
He was really good at like making fun of people and cutting people down. And that's where I got that from. Yeah.
What about your mom?
No. No, absolutely not. She like had no sense of humor. In fact, I was just telling my mom today that she's excited to go see Carlos Mencia at the fucking West Palm Beach Improv.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she loves Carlos Mencia. I'm like, how are you my mother? I don't understand. She has the worst door. She is Marge Simpson, the person. Like, she laughs the worst, nerdiest shit. I'm just like, anyone that meets my mom is like, what the fuck? And she's coming out here for the first time in like a week. She's never been here before. She's never been west of the Mississippi.
Has she seen you perform?
Nope.
Really?
No. I don't know if I can get... I don't want to take it to an open mic. I don't know if I'm going to have any shows.
No,
don't
take it to an open mic,
no. Yeah. Maybe I'll wait until I get like a show. I don't know.
Yeah. What about brothers, sisters?
I got one brother. He's younger than me. He's like 33, but mentally he's like 79 years old. He is a fucking... I don't know what happened to this kid. He's like an old man in a younger guy's body. All he does is fucking fish all day. He's obsessed with... I mean, literally, not like people throw that word around. Like, he's literally obsessed with fishing. It's all he does his whole life. Every fucking... like every time he can. He lives on a lake. He lives on a lake in the middle of New York State and just fishes.
Fuck.
I hate fucking fishing. I hate fish and I hate fishing.
You're not a fan of sports either.
No, I hate it.
God damn.
I don't get it. I know. And I'm like a nerd stuck in a jock's body. I never made any sense. Everyone's like... I was always... I'd be in line at the grocery store. I'm like... See the game last night, man? Like some old like horseshoe bald factory dude, and just like, I don't even, what game? Like what sport? Isn't there 19 fucking games on a night? I don't know, you know? I would just be like, yeah, how about that Johnson? He'd be like, yeah.
Your family, did they like sports?
My mom did. She liked the Bills, which was, you know, part of the sadness of growing up. Yeah, she'd go fucking crazy on like during Bills games. My dad was like a casual football fan at best. That was it. Hmm. But yeah.
So just one brother?
I got a brother and a half-sister.
No shit. So your parents separated?
Yeah. You got to keep them separated.
All right. You know, and I'm going to call you out for that fucking... You use more diversionary tactics than any other person.
Well, no, I'll talk about it.
Even in comics. No, no, you always have one to throw out. You're like... I could tell you like, you know... I'd be like, yeah, we got a show down in Inglewood. You'd be like, Inglewood, I was up to no good.
Yeah.
You'd be like, all right. You'd have 10 fucking...
Jules, my man in Inglewood, get your asses in here. Yeah, I'm terrible.
No, we're going to dig into why you do that later on. But anyways, so for right now, though, parents not into sports, or well, they're more into sports than you are. Where do you think... Let me backtrack here. They separated, right?
Yeah, I think I was in 7th grade. And then my mom... So, if you don't know, Buffalo is still one of the most segregated cities in the country. Or it was. Like, right around the time when I moved, it was like Buffalo, Cincinnati, and like somewhere else were like the most heavily segregated. So the Blakes and the Whites, they don't get along terrifically well. And my mom's Italian, and she has one brother who's like super Italian. So she breaks up with like... My biker, you know, well, breaks up. They got a divorce. Like, my biker ass, like, fucking, like, giant weightlifter, hard-ass Clint Eastwood father. And a year later ends up with, like, a Samuel L. Jackson black guy. Like, hey, what's up, motherfucker? Like, black. Like, no, not like Bryant Gumbel. Like, his dude was black, like, from the hood.
Are they still together?
No, but they were together a long time, and it did not go over well at my family. Oh, boy.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My dad wasn't thrilled, and nor was her Italian brother, who they basically wrote her off from then on, and they barely talk to this day, even though my mom and the black guy are through.
No shit. So yeah. They never forgave her?
Not really, no. Yeah, it made a real dent, and they never really got over it. But, yeah, it was like I grew up in like a fucking Spike Lee movie. It was ridiculous.
Damn. So would it be fair to say that your dad and your brother were racist?
No, no, her brother, not my, not oh, my brother. Oh, her brother. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, to a degree, to an East Coast working class guy degree. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no.
But like,
no,
he was friends with them. That they made friends, and they were cool. He wasn't like. At first, he flipped out, but then he was like, over the years, he like got to know him, and like they were actually like pretty cool. He threatened to kill him at one point.
Okay, you think I'm not gonna ask you for a follow up on that? Or
I love this fucking story. So. I don't know how deep down his rabbit hole go, because like I have to explain like my whole like dad was like a fucking my dad wasn't a biker, but two of my his brothers were like actual like Hells Angels bikers, so he rolled with like a rough crew. And my dad was just like a fucking like a hard ass. Like he got a job at his work where he works. As he started out as like an enforcer that like the fucking rich boss hired to like bounce people out of this like pool hall or some shit like that. I don't know. Somebody tried to hire my dad to kill somebody once, but whatever. So like he wasn't a, what did they say in Princess Bride? He's like, who are you? He's like, I'm no one to be trifled with. That was like my dad. He was no one to be trifled with, right? He was a big dude. Like you just knew he wasn't fucking around. Like when he threatened shit, it was no like joke. Like he would do it in like, I'll go to fucking jail. I'm stupid. That he was like Joe Pesci, casino stupid. Yeah. So he invites the I call him the black guy because well, I've explained it on my show. But so my dad's name was Jerry, and then the black guy's name was Jerry. So when I would say, oh yeah, Jerry was over there, so they'd be like, what Jerry? The white one or the black one? So he just slowly became the black guy, and then I even called him that, and he thought it was funny. So like it just stuck. So yeah.
Did you like him?
I did, but he didn't treat my mom very well. He was a fucking cheater. He was a philanderer. You've made a cuckold of me.
Fuck.
Yeah. But
did it really affect you though? I mean, if you liked him?
Not really, because I don't know. It was weird. Like she hooked up with the black guy, and they moved like they've like furnished the basement and like basically like moved downstairs and then like had my sister, and it's like they started like a new family down there. It was really weird. And I really like grew apart from them, and I kind of didn't give a shit what they did. I didn't really. I just kind of did my own thing. I was just like, whatever. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, dude. Just your story. The bits that of you that you've really revealed, you've kind of thrown off the sense that you were kind of a loner.
Yeah.
Rebel. No, I said loner. Don't fucking use
I rebelled against my heterosexuality. No, yeah, I was. I always was very much like that. Well, we have to go even further back if you really want to get in the nuts and bolts of Luke Allen.
I do.
Comedic fucking warrior. Apparently, when I was born, this is what my mom told me, I was super jaundiced as a baby. So the doctor had to take me. Like, my mom never got. I never got to, like, form a bond with my mom. She never got to hold me. I got taken and put in an incubator, like, immediately. And I was in there for, like, 2 months. And the doctor told my mom it could have profound, like consequences on my personality. I mean, I could get a personality on my personality that I could be like it could fuck me up, and I think it kind of did. If you've gone through my internet browser history, you'll definitely know that there's been some problems. Zoo animals.
So, yeah. Then yeah, that's what ways now that you're older do you think it did?
Well, I think it's in a good way because my brother's all fucked up, and my sister is too. Because
my in what way though?
Well, because my mom has like a severe. I don't know how the fuck my dad ended up with my mom because he was like a fucking, like a rabble rousing biker, and my mom is just like terrified of the planet Earth. She has like severe like panic disorder. Like she can't like we could never travel as kids. We couldn't do anything. We couldn't go like far away. We couldn't travel. We couldn't do anything like fun because my mom would fucking bug out. She was on all this medication and shit. I mean, not like make her crazy medication, but like shit to like Klonopin and all that kind of stuff.
Were you shown like affection
as
a kid?
Yeah, but they were like, they were more concerned with like raising us like fucking proper, like dinner was like horrible. It was like eating with Gunnery Sergeant Hartman with my dad. He was like a fucking disciplinarian. Like you couldn't put your elbows on the table and shit like that. And he was more concerned with like making sure we were like, raised correctly than being like a caring, nurturing man. Because like his dad, my grandpa was they were like, they wouldn't even hug their kids. He hated kids. He told my father he hated kids, my grandpa. But then they had like 9 children. I don't understand. They kept having a fucking kids, but then they wouldn't hug any of them and shit like that. And they all grew up fucked up. Actually, most of his brothers are good and like affectionate and like totally not like my dad. There was like, I think 3 out of the 6 boys were bad and the other 3 were just normal like kind of guys.
So what's the closest moment you had with your mom and your dad?
Oh, my God. I don't know. Probably a funerals and shit, but, like, I don't know. My dad, he just...
I was going to say, did he ever talk? I mean, did he... What was the most expressive, I mean, that you ever saw him towards affection with you?
I don't know. I can't remember. I don't know. If he did, honest to God, it was so long ago, I can't remember. I hardly ever see him. I only see him when I go home. Sometimes I don't go home to visit for over a year. And if I go home, I see him for like one. I see him like maybe once a year, if not less. And that's been for the last 12 years.
Does he call or any shit like that? Or do you call him?
No, we text, and we mostly text Goodfellas and Jerky Boys quotes. Like, we speak in Goodfellas and Jerky Boys. That's it. Yeah.
What about your mom?
She's like affectionate. She texts. I don't talk to her on the phone as much anymore. I hate talking to her on the phone because she's just so. It's hard to talk to her because she has no like world experience. Like she's just never done anything. She's like terrified to like leave the. I mean, not terrified to leave the house, but she's never gone out and traveled or like. She just lived a very like fucking mousy life. God, it sounds terrible. I don't know how to describe it because like if you met her, you'd be like she's totally like. She's nothing like you described. Like, yeah, but like if you got to know her, or if I told you more stories, you'd be like, oh, okay.
No, I totally get it. My mother is one of the most meek fucking people.
Really?
Yeah, she's that. Like, she always told me, she's like, I don't know how you get up there and just talk to fucking strangers, or how you find shit to talk to people about.
Your mom seems like she'd be like a loud, like New York fucking Italian, like, get in here, mind ya, and like make you eat and shit. You eat a spaghetti, you finish it.
Fucking hit me with a rolling pin. Why were you? Anyways, so what was high school like for you then?
I was mostly like a. Well, I was funny, so I was kind of friends with everybody. Well, all the kids in the grade had to be fucking hated my guts because they were all jocks, and I made a lot of enemies going to like the boys and girls club like in our town. And because I hated sports, I would go there and just like fuck around and like kick the basketballs and shit. Just be like a loud asshole. Be like,
in the middle of
you guys see fucking G.I. Joe this week? Like, you know, basically like I am now, but like smaller and like even less fucking, you know, I don't know, friendly. It was horrible. So they hated me. And I and like they not like beat me up, but they just hated me. Like I get kind of bullied in gym class a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah, they probably 100% justified. Most of those guys were all douchebags, but they were really, like really bad kids. Our school was pretty fucking bad. But my grade, I was generally friend. I was friends or at least friendly with like most people because I was like funny and I made everybody laugh. But like I was like a metalhead and like a punk rock kid and like I had like my core group of friends and I like stayed mostly with them. I'm like still friends with most of those guys to this fucking day. I still like talk. This is like my high school reunion. It's my fucking 20th high school reunion. I'm so fucking old. And I'm like, I don't need to go. Like everyone I need to see, like I'm still friends with and talk to. Like anyone I need to see, like. I see him when I go home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just going to go and see how, like, old and, like, especially, like, the chicks that I used to, like, whack off to and wanted to, like, fucking hang out with. And that they're not on social media and I haven't seen them in 20 years. I'm like, I don't want to see how bad they got. I don't. Live in my memory, in my spank bank, where you're still fucking 18.
Let me ask this, just for continuity's sake. When you do live from the 405, do you hold the mic like that?
Yeah. I drive and I hold it like this. Why? What the fuck's the point about that?
So if you have to do a quick two-hand turn, you're...
Happen. It's the fucking 405. It's just basically a big number 7.
Okay, you guys can't see him, but...
You're lucky for that. He looks like it's bad enough having to listen to me. Imagine having to watch me, too.
Fucking Bob Barker with this long boom.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it's like a tall, skinny... Yeah, this is actually a shotgun mic for a fucking like film production. It's like... Yeah, it is. It's like one of those 1960s fucking... Dick Cavett microphones.
Just spin the wheel.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So wait, what was your dad like? Or am I supposed to ask that? Or just
no,
only...
no.
Okay.
So,
well, then I'm interviewing you sometime.
So my other question too is for you comedy. Then what do you think made you funny?
I probably having to fit in with people. I remember being not funny like when I was little. I was like serious. And first grade, I remember, like, making a joke and making somebody laugh, and then I was, like, goofball guy after that. But I, like, remember, like, a short time where, like, I didn't fuck around. I was, like, real serious, really weird. I'm, like, really little, like, fucking 4 or 5 years old or something.
Yeah. So who would you say you were more like than your mom or your dad?
Oh, my dad. Jesus Christ. I'm nothing like my fucking mom. Yeah.
Hmm.
But even him, I'm not much. He's way more, like, reserved, like, laid back, like, just working man, fucking... He's like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino, only like not nearly that like racist. But, you know, just like comes home out of the porch, has a beer, kind of fucking like, yeah, the world's kind of fucked up. He's like one of these kind of sort of dudes. You know what I mean? You know, you're from back east. You know how those guys are. Yeah.
I'm from Colorado.
You spent more time back east, didn't you?
I spent a lot of time back east.
Yeah. But even Colorado, they're still like, if you just went to like a shit kicker bar in Colorado, it's like.
I come from shit kickers.
Yeah.
Essentially. So, okay, you find that, even validation that you fucking people listen to you? Because, I mean, obviously, if you landed the joke as a kid and it made somebody laugh, then you like that feeling, I imagine.
I guess, yeah. That's the only way I know how to, like, relate to people is make them laugh. Because, like, otherwise, I'm kind of Daniel Plainview, which I kind of hate people. Really do. That's why I'm like, why am I going to stand up? I just want to be like left alone and not bothered. Why am I doing this?
it's interesting though, because you do separate yourself from a lot of situations. Like, I think that's why you do a lot of the redirecting, like,
really
little bits. Yeah, you do that. You do that a lot. Like, especially if we ever touch something deep. See, like right now, you're going to fucking throw one out.
No, I don't know.
Show us on the Luke Allen doll where he touched you.
I never know. I don't know. If I do, I'm like totally not conscious of it.
You do it all the time. Like, you'll even text shit. Like,
I do it more with you because I know that you have that movie reference brain now. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So I do it way worse with you than other people because, like, I know it'll make you laugh because you and me laugh at the same kind of shit.
See, yeah. So moving up, you, because we're going to get to how we met. So you go to high school, you...
Oh, I remember that night. I still walk funny.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Old bathrobe Billy gotcha?
Yep. Ugh. Used that whole jar of Vaseline. That was really something.
Can this thing edit?
Oh. No, we'll fix it in post. Okay, are we fucking rolling? I looked the angle it was at. I didn't see I looked like it was green. I was like, oh my god, did I not hit fucking record? Can you imagine people would have missed all that fucking magic that we just made?
Okay, so you relate to people through comedy in high school. What happens after you graduate?
I go to community college film school in order to transfer into the bigger film school because my grades were fucking terrible in high school and I hated school. And I hated doing like homework and shit, but they weren't. Yeah, I was like a fucking C student at best.
Okay,
what's up?
No, I'm just looking. I've never used this thing before. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So okay,
that's what I said to you the night we met.
Oh my fucking god!
Sorry.
Post. So, did you what drew you to like fucking? Because we like the same movies.
Yeah,
we have a lot of in common in terms of that.
Yeah.
In terms of the movies, because when I first met you, you'd reference like 10 movies in like fucking 5 minutes. And I was like, fuck, I recognize 10 of those. And you probably did like 20.
Yeah.
And I was like, god damn, this guy thinks like fucking Opie and Anthony.
Yep.
That immediately was like where I went, where I was like, fuck, I'm in on like half of this shit, but the other half, I'm fucking...
Yeah,
I'd have to sit down and think about it. But okay, so was that a big part of your life then when you were a kid watching movies?
No, that was so weird. I never cared about like film. There's like a handful of movies I obsessively loved, like Star Wars and shit, and like.
Okay, so yeah, give me some of them. Star Wars was one.
Like Star Wars and Indiana Jones. I remember being obsessed with Raiders of the Lost Ark because we didn't get a fucking a VCR until I was. Not until we moved to our new... I think I was like 9. Because the first thing we ever rented, we got a VCR, and the first thing we ever got from Blockbuster was Ghostbusters 2. And that came out in 1988. So I think I was 9. So we were like...
Oh my god, it's the Scolari Brothers! Yeah, the Scolari Brothers!
Trying for murder! Gave him a chair!
Why didn't you just tell me you weren't even ghosts?
Yeah. You wouldn't want us exposing ourselves. That fucking scene is so... That's the best scene in the whole movie. It's so good. And it's all downhill from there. The first 40 minutes of Ghostbusters 2 is fucking great.
Oh, I
fucking... And then it just fucking, oh, just eats a dick and just tries to rehab that fucking stupid painting. Yuck. What a bummer. Oh, do you feel the same way? What do you think?
I was a kid.
Yeah, have you seen it since?
Yeah. No, I always get nostalgic.
Yeah.
Because I used to fucking, when I was a little kid, I'd watch it all the way through the credits.
Yeah.
Because I fucking, my dad loved Bobby Brown for some reason.
That was a great song. I had the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack. I fucking loved that shit. That was a good tune.
I'd be up there and I'd just fucking, I'll listen to it like everyone's at a great while walking to work.
Yeah.
Because there's like a piece of busted concrete and somebody spilled a jar of something and it made me
all of the slime. Oh, that's awesome.
So I was like, fuck, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole. And
that's so great. That's why I couldn't, when I got fucking Kurt Fuller from, to be in my gay Batman fucking Funny or Die sketch, I was so excited. I'm like, fucking Ghostbusters 2, fucking Kurt Fuller. He was the Walter Peck of Part 2. Ah, so great.
He's great.
I had them committed movie. To Parkview Central Hospital.
I was protecting your interest.
Yeah, I was protecting your interest. You can quit protecting my interest right now. You're fired. He's still great. I love Kurt fucking Fuller. He's the best.
See, though, it's funny because as much as people shit on that movie, I don't shit on it like that. I don't. I'm not as hard on it as I am because it's a bad movie.
Yeah,
but
it's just so lazy. That's a problem. It's like so lazy. It's just, it felt like such a cash grab.
Well, yeah. Why would you? Why would you remake it if you weren't trying to do the same thing?
Yeah,
that's the thing. There was no point in a sequel that, you know, if you went there and you were expecting new jokes.
Yeah,
I think the fucking joke's on you. Then it's like, well,
I didn't even get the jokes because I was like, I just thought like the fucking ghost, like the actual like effects were cool and all that kind of shit. Like that's why those movies are so great, because like as you get older, the jokes all start to. That was like growing up watching Airplane. Like I started watching. I was a little fucking kid, like 4 or 5 years old. My dad and I like the slapsticky shit. Like that was pretty obvious. Was funny, but like when you get older, you start getting like all the fucking jokes start to make sense. It's like something, a picture coming into focus. And then you're just like, fuck, this is so genius, and it's still fucking funny, like 30 years later.
Well, what's interesting with Ghostbusters, too, is they say that's where, Bill Murray said that's where the movie went wrong.
Where?
Was all those effects.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He said
it's the dumb plot, the fucking painting. It wasn't even like, there's so much they could have done. They went to a haunted painting, and the guy comes out, it's fucking stupid.
With Vigo?
Yeah, that was just lame. I don't know.
The bimbo with
it definitely had, it's like, there's a lot of, it's not horrible. But it's just, compared to the first one, it's not even fucking, it's, you know.
So this is a good segue into what made you love film then, out of high school.
Oh, yeah. So there was, I don't know how, the one I remember, this is like when I was 19 or 18 or 19, yeah.
Yep.
And like I said, there was a handful of movies I was super crazy about all my life. And then they had this, I don't think I had a job, but I just had like a summer off. And like Blockbuster was starting to go out of business. And they had this like you could rent any movie in the fucking place for like a dollar or something like that. I don't know how the fuck I think I watched Raging Bull on like TBS or something, and I watched like Goodfellas. And I remember my dad always loving it, like growing up, he would always be watching it on HBO and shit like that. And I never like really got it, you know, because it was just like adults. I don't know. Goodfellas never, like growing up, I never seemed that compelling to me. Like Full Metal Jacket did, and like Aliens and shit. My dad would watch, like, they wouldn't let me watch rated R movies. And I would like hide like down the hallway and like fucking watch the TV in the living room. And I'd go to school the next day and quote like Gunnery Sergeant Hartman calling people gooks and shit. I'd be like, shut the fuck up, you gook. And the teacher would be like, where did you hear that? What is it from? And I was like, oh, I saw it in a movie. Like, hey, don't say that. They're like, do you know what that means? I'm like, no, I saw him in an asshole. And they're like, no. What a little dickhead I was. I sucked.
So do you think those movies were a way to relate to people? Maybe your dad and other people?
No, I think like subcon. This is gonna sound so fucking, hey man, it's so artsy. But I think on like some level, I like something about. I remember loving like a little kid. When did Raising Arizona come out? 87.
Oh fuck yeah!
I loved that movie, and I think there was more going on than like I knew, because I loved the way it was. It was so cartoonish how they shot it, and my parents fucking hated it. They hated that movie. And come on, but change. I fucking hate this movie. My parents hated it. They didn't get it.
God, how old were you when you saw it?
Like when it was on HBO, when it was new. I was like eight or nine.
Wow, you were fucking young.
Yeah, I loved it. And then I think somewhere on some level, like, without realizing that I liked the way, like, movies were, like, put together. And I think that, like went in my subconscious somewhere. This sounds so fucking douchey.
No,
this sounds like John C. Reilly in Boogie Nights when he's like, violence is something that plagues us as a society. And he tries to get all deep.
Again, there you go, fucking trying to redirect.
Mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah, I think that happened on some level. Because I remember, I talked about this on my show, but I remember watching Jaws 4, The Revenge, with my dad.
Wasn't that 2?
No, this is the last one they ever made, Jaws 4, Jesus. with Mario Van Peebles. Any place that you're American. He's like, I'm going to stab the shark. It was so bad. So I remember watching it, and there's a scene at the end where like Michael Caine is in it. And you've seen that, right? You know Jaws 4? Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I thought it was cool because there was a shark eating people and shit. Like, it doesn't take much more than that to entertain you when you're fucking 8. Plus, the Nintendo game was awesome. Remember the fucking Jaws Nintendo game? It was so cool.
Yeah.
The mini sub would go, bloop, 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 bloop.
Oh, my God.
Things.
You do that fucking amazing.
Thanks, man. I've been working on it all day. just in case Jaws 4 sub came up from the video game. But I remember watching it, and there's this scene at the end where... she thinks Michael Caine died, like his plane crashed and he doesn't come out of the water. Remember, she thought that he died. And she's like, why did you bring him here? Why did you bring him? And she starts like pounding on the guy's chest. And he's like, what did you want me to do, Ma?
And I remember my dad goes, "The fucking acting's terrible." And I was like, "Why?" And he's like, "Did you see that? Did you believe what she did?" He's like, "Did that look like how a real person would react?" And I was like, "I don't know. I've never seen anyone fucking crash their water plane into the ocean with a big shark trying to eat him." Like, I was so perplexed by that. I was like, and then I was like obsessed with like trying to spot bad acting in movies because I didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. I was like, "I don't know. I guess is that what happens when people fucking."
Can you have conversations like this now with your dad since
yeah.
he was a movie fan?
I can now, yeah. I never used to be. I used to be, not like intimidated, but
yeah,
I didn't
you
know.
You were a little kid then. Like, he probably.
No, even in like my fucking teens and 20s and shit. I could kind of, but like, I could talk to him now like I talk to you, and I never used to. And it was all the years just being isolated out here and turning into this fucking complete maniac that I am now from sitting in traffic and every other goddamn stress from this city has just fucking destroyed me. But so now I don't even realize I'm doing it anymore, and I don't shut the fuck up.
No, that's interesting. I think some of it too that had to be like the authoritarian
yeah.
might have melted away. I think as people get older too,
yeah,
they start to see like, oh fuck, this is my kid. I should.
Yeah, once they got divorced, he was way cooler. But when we lived with him, and he left when I was what was I fucking 12 or something? He was a fucking asshole. He was a miserable fuck. He I don't think he ever wanted to have. Kids. I don't think he ever wanted to get married and have kids. I really don't think he ever did. Oh yeah, I didn't finish the him threatening the black guy story. So my dad had there's so much of this shit. So growing up, my dad was all into snakes and reptiles. He had tons of fucking snakes, poison, all the shit.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we were like famous like town because we had a 20-foot Burmese python.
Dude, I'm Indiana Jones. I fucking snakes.
Asps, very dangerous. You go first.
You go first.
Yeah, we had this giant. It was bigger than the one in the fucking Buffalo City Zoo. It was bigger than that. So people would come over, like I would, like people from like other, like I'd meet them later in life. And be like, dude, I've been to your house. He's like, I've seen your fucking snakes. Like they came over when I wasn't home because like their dad was friends with my dad, and they'd come over and see all the lizards and snakes and all this kind of shit. So my parents get divorced, or whatever. My mom starts seeing a black guy, and then my dad for a while he sort of opened a pet shop, but not really. It was like a reptile store, but it was this weird like. Just kind of storefront where he had all his snakes, and then it never really turned into a store. It was just basically like a shop that he lived in with all of his snakes, and then people would just come over and like hang out, like everyone from his work, like everyone fucking loved my dad. He was like a real like a fucking pop, like an easy guy to hang out with, you know. Everybody thought he was cool, and they liked the snakes. But then he got like cobras and rattlesnakes and all this kind of shit. So I don't know how long it was into it, but my mom seeing the black guy, and I'm like a teenager. So he has the black guy come over. Now the black guy grew up in like the fucking he's the typical. His mom was a big fat black woman, beat all the kids, had 19 children, all the kids on welfare, all the kids did drugs, went to jail. He went to prison for something, and I never got the whole fucking story of what it was. So he was no fucking snowflake, you know. So my dad's like, yeah, he's like, I just want to talk to you. So he comes to my dad's fucking store, his pet shop, on like a Friday night. And there's like, it's kind of like in an isolated area. So he's like, I don't give a shit what you do. He's like, with like my ex-wife or whatever. He's like, if I ever find out you touch your kids, my kids, I'll fucking kill you. He's like, I'll chop you up and I'll feed you to my snakes. And he goes, something tells me no one's really going to miss you very much. He's like, that's all I want to say. And then he said they shook hands. And he's like, you know what? He's like, I respected him for showing up that night. And he's like, ever since then, I thought he was okay. And like, they never really had a problem. But the black guy told me about that years later. And he's like, I'm not afraid of people. He's like, I might have been in jail and shit. He's like, I tell you what. He's like, I look in your father's eyes. He's like, I knew he was not fucking kidding. He's like, I knew that guy would fucking kill me. He was not fucking around. I was like, yeah. I love that story. Oh no. He goes. You see all these snakes in here? He's like, a lot of accidents could happen in here. That's what he told him. Isn't that great? Yeah. That's that story.
A nice good fucking one.
Yeah, and then they were cool after that.
Did he ever get bit?
Yeah, he got nicked on his fucking pinky once. He didn't tell us about it until days later. He went in the hospital, and his whole fucking hand and arm blew up. One of his pygmy rattler fucking... But he had an albino cobra. Dude, he had a fucking cobra. It was totally illegal. And not devenomized. Yeah, I touched it once. My mom fucking went crazy. How sexual... She's like, you touched your father's cobra? Gross. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I touched it one time. He was like, don't fucking put your hand in there.
So...
I think part of them kind of wanted to get bit by it. Because that's a pretty easy death, cobra. You just fall asleep.
No shit.
Yeah, rattlesnake's horrible. Like all your shit, like cobra or whatever gets in your veins, and you got about 10 minutes and you're done.
God damn.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But rattlesnakes, holy fuck, yeah, you get all gangrenous and shit.
Doesn't it, like, fucking, yeah, burn your fucking veins and yeah, shit going down?
Yeah, it's fucking, it's nasty. I saw a picture of it, and I was like, holy shit. But
I've seen
it barely got, it was a baby. It was a little fucking, it wasn't even full grown. And it nicked his finger, just got a tiny bit in there, and his fucking arm almost fucking fell off. Yeah, those things are brutal.
God damn.
Yeah.
So, wait, you touched this fucking...
Yeah, I touched, like, its tail.
How old were you?
I was, like, 18, 17, 18. What?
Was this a fucking year ago?
No. Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was back when we had that shop. But its head was in like a... It was pretty safe. Like, its head was in like a thing. It was... I think it was like eating or it was... I don't know. It couldn't really get me, but it still was...
Yeah, if they're eating, they won't...
Yeah, it was something like that. It was pretty safe. I wasn't like trying to fucking smack it in the face or some kind of shit. It did poison eye, bitch eye! I do one magic act. I have one cobra. And it stung me. He's like, hey, we don't do that kind of humor here. Remember when he's talking to that black dude? That's the best. This is very serious stuff.
Okay, so you had a community college to study film.
Yeah. Okay, so this summer there was, it was like all you can rent for like a buck. And I'd seen Goodfellas, and then I heard, I don't know, it's somewhere or another, I like heard the name like Martin Scorsese, and then I was like really getting into fucking. I thought Goodfellas. I was like, wow, this is like a really like well made movie. I guess I never like realized it. Like I knew that it was like fun to watch because it was like tough guys doing shit. But like, I started to notice on like a deeper level that it was like there was maybe something going on. So then I just started renting. Like I never like thought to that there is a director and he makes movies a certain way and I should check out all of his movies. And he was like and then I started going back and watching everything. And I never watched anything from like the 70s. I was like, who the fuck wants to watch old movies? Fuck this. So I started going, then I watched Casino and I was like, I didn't know there was like something called, I didn't know there was like cinematography in a movie. I didn't know there was like a thing. And I was like, why does this look like this? Like, why is it so like hazy? And like, why do people have like that fucking glow around them? I'm like, this is so weird looking. So then that got like, I don't know. And then I started going in more, I was like hooked in like a week. I just like didn't come out of my fucking room. I watched like every Scorsese movie I could get my fucking hands on, and then I went to Barnes and Nobles and I got like his biography and I started. So I watched Mean Streets and I basically wanted it to be like Goodfellas and Casino, and it wasn't. And I was like, this is fucking boring and old and like I don't get it, and it was stupid. And then I read his biography and then he explained like all the stuff that was going on in the fucking like thematically, and I was like. Oh, I went back and rewatched it, and it was like a fucking, like, I just got cinematic baptized. I was like, oh my God, there's, like, religion, and, like, movies, like, talk about things, and, like, try to, like, make social points. I didn't know. I just never, like, it just fucking hit me like a god. It was like fucking Malcolm X seeing Elijah Muhammad in his jail cell. Only with Scorsese. Like, hey, go back and watch all my movies, all right? You should watch my movies, and watch this.
Yeah, right there. Good. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
No. Okay, yeah. Hold on. Yep.
Yep.
Fucking.
Okay. So then I was fucked from then on, and I started going to film school.
Did you know the direction you wanted to go right away?
No, I had no fucking idea. All I knew is I liked movies, and like, I guess like the base impulse was to like maybe move to LA and work, or either go to LA or New York City. And originally, yeah, it was New York City and try to work in like film production somewhere as like a somebody. But yeah. It just seemed so like fantastical. I'm like that doesn't happen to like I'm just some fucking schlub from like the shitty burbs, like working class shitty like fucking Depew. Like that doesn't happen to me. Yeah.
To my people.
Yeah.
No, it's I felt the same way.
Yeah.
I really did. So I think I had like it's funny just to interject a little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
I had this no, you're good. I had this same kind of feeling in watching like I knew watching The Godfather it meant something to people I gave a shit about and people I knew like, oh, this guy's a fucking hero of mine. This guy like my uncle. He was the one that like let me out of work and he's like, come on, we gotta watch this movie and I was like, what? What is it? He's like, it's Godfather. You haven't seen it.
How old were you when this happened?
I gotta watch this. I was like 14.
Oh, really?
So I'm watching it, and I fucking fell asleep a couple times and woke up. And
yeah, 14's a fucking rough to like to watch that.
I kept looking at like, why the fuck is this important? And then, you know, fucking Luca Brasi gets hit, and I remember like being attracted to like the fight and thinking like, wow, that's really interesting that they did that.
Didn't it bug you how like old fashioned it looked though? Like the blood looks like fucking pasta sauce and shit.
No,
like shitty Mo Green's eye. He just lays his head down. That's the lamest fucking. God damn it!
None of that bugged you at 14?
It didn't bother me because it was kind of like the symbolism of it. I think I understood right away.
Oh, really?
You're smart, dude. Why they shot him in the eye. I was like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Why? Why did they shoot him in the eye?
Well, he betrayed. Remember they talk about it in The Sopranos.
Big I haven't made that far. Yeah, pussy's been whacked, so they talked about it. How the fuck did I miss that? I feel like I missed an episode because there's like a bunch of memories of early Sopranos that I have that I'm halfway through season three now and I haven't seen any of them and I'm like, I swear there was an episode where this happened, I haven't seen it.
What it was that got me too was I remember I was watching it again, just looking for shit. And I think I was trying to find a way to relate to people too.
Yeah.
And I was watching it when he fucking when he goes to war and he's sitting there with Kate, you know, or he comes back from war and he's a war hero.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you see,
he's a war hero.
When I woke up was he had come back from Italy.
Yeah.
And his hair was slicked back and he was all in black.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because until that time I was like, I haven't even seen this fucker change.
Yeah.
He does it so subtle. It's just like, okay, there's no like, oh, look, he's good Michael. Now there's nothing definite that makes him bad Michael.
Yeah.
You just see him progressively get worse and worse and worse till finally he's fucking gone. But anyways, I love
looking. I can't believe you got all that at 14. That's fucking crazy.
No, not at 14, though. Like, I just kept watching it, trying to figure out, like, what is it about this movie that there was something weird about it that was haunting. I think in some respects it was because my grandpa reminded me of Vito, and I was like, oh shit, like everybody loves and respects this guy.
Yeah.
Like this is, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
It was weird. Like, I remember fucking wetbacks would come up to our house, and that's what he would call me. He's like, if there's somebody that comes up, just come get me. And I was like, all right. So I'd go get my grandpa and I'd fucking be like, hey. And dude, shady looking fucking Mexicans would come to it.
What's his story? What was he a gangster or something?
Well, I'd go, what do they want? No, dude, he'd fucking read their mail. Because they couldn't speak English.
Oh.
So he'd go over there, or like if somebody had a problem with the foreman, he'd fucking translate for him.
That's some young Vito shit, though. He would do that.
Yeah, that was the thing of it. Was like, I remember him talking, like, he was always very stay to your roots and all that other good shit. But anyway, so you start studying film. Who'd you like in terms of teachers at community college? Did anybody really, really?
Yeah, I had a great fucking. I think that's what really cemented it because I had a great teacher at the community. He was fucking awesome. Like just to jump ahead, like the actual state college sucked. The teachers sucked. No one gave a shit. The things were so boring. There were so many things we had to take that just I hadn't. To this day, I don't know why they made us take these courses. They had no bearing on anything. But the guy at the community college was fucking awesome, and he was like super into like film and like he was like an artsy guy, but he was like relatable. And he would show you all this, like, he would just point out all kinds of stuff in movies like I never thought about. And, like, yeah, he was really good. John Harrigan, I don't know if he's still there, but he was awesome.
Harrigan?
I remember we watched...
Wasn't that Danny Glover's name in Predator 2?
I don't know. Why would you know that? What am I flirting? Why? Why would you know that? Why? That movie's terrible.
Really, we're going to pretend I'm the only one that fucking watched that movie? All right,
I saw Predator 2 is horrible. I tried to watch it a couple years ago. It is fucking unbearable.
I don't want to know the answer. Gary Busey gets cut in half.
Yeah. He almost did in real life. I think his fucking brain did.
Okay, so...
He deserves it after that movie.
Oh, fuck. Dude, I like Murtaugh.
I do. Oh, wait, what are you talking
about? Danny Glover, Predator 2.
Oh, yeah, but he's not Murtaugh. He's just fucking stupid.
He's a cop. He's always Murtaugh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. He's always too old for this shit. Since 1985.
Fucking okay. Guy.
Except in Royal Tenenbaums. Did you just call me Coltrane? But if I did, there's nothing you could do about it, isn't there?
I just showed Rob Banks that movie for the first time, like, a month ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He's like...
Did he get it?
He's like, nah, I love how it shot.
That's a good impression.
Doing the fucking... So, okay, then after community college, what do you do?
So then I transfer into... So I still have no idea what I'm going to do, like where I'm going to go. And I transfer into University of Buffalo to go into their film program. And they're like... Their program sucked. We had like 16 mil... Now, this is like early 2000, so like film was still around, but it was like, you know, in the fucking... Entering like the final ages. Yeah. And we had my throat's all fucked up. We had CP2 old news cameras, 16 millimeter footage.
The cameras from the 60s. Like, wow, that's really going to fucking prepare us for the real world. Thanks. This is great. It was like daylight spools. You didn't even have to. The only cool thing is that we edited on actual old. We had an actual Steinbeck with reel to reel. And we had a Moviola where you just turn the fucking wheel like the old. Like they had, you know, the whole century before. But it was actually pretty cool. Like, I actually cut and spliced fucking film. That was kind of fun.
So, do you know how to do that?
I don't anymore. I did for a little bit, and only on 16. It was really tricky to sync up the fucking film and the actual soundtrack, like actual like Nagra machine that did reel to reel audio. So, it's so fucking hard to do like actual. It still is. It still is even in Final Cut. It's still a pain in the ass. But like actual film. If you fucked up one thing, it was like, oh my god, and you could easily like physically lose the piece. That now it's gone. Now your fucking audio is gone. It's not like you throw it in your trash bin on your computer. Like if you cut the fucking piece of film, now you're in trouble. If you lose it, dude, it was so tricky. It was such a fucking pain in the ass. That's why you ever watch on that,
dude. At least that's a fucking skill. Like that's true. A skill set that our fucking here. Like at least Heroes of Mine.
Yeah.
Because I think of Wes Craven, and Wes Craven was talking about how important that was for him.
Yeah.
To look at every single fucking frame.
Yeah.
And to be like, oh my god, this is so time consuming. He's like, you really had to commit to an idea if you were going to shoot it.
Yeah.
Because
true.
Then once you got to editing and you knew you were gonna have to do all this little stupid fucking bullshit with the editing, you really could edit on the spot in terms of what do we really need to shoot here.
Yeah.
So I respect
the limitations of it are I think helped a lot.
Yeah, the imagination.
It saved a lot of movies. Yeah. You ever see those Raging Bull special features where he's like, I don't know what they're working on, but like Thelma Schumacher's like cutting something. She's on an actual fucking Steinbeck machine, and she's just like doing 19 fucking things at once, and she's like playing stuff back, and like she's like cutting and splicing in like seconds. I'm like, oh my god, look at this fucking woman. She's been doing it for like 50 years. It's crazy, dude.
I saw something like that with Goodfellas.
Yeah.
They did something like that.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
She kept showing him.
I think that's what I'm thinking
and
of.
And he's just sitting there. Yeah, like take it back. I'm like, you son of a bitch. Do you see what, like, why is the camera even showing him in the movie? I'm like, show her. She's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so they have a shitty program. What are you going to do?
Complain and be like, I hate this. I'm miserable. I fucking hated that school. I hated my whole time at fucking UB. I didn't make that many friends. And the problem was, because it's Buffalo and there's no film market or no nothing, all they cram down your throat is like avant-garde, local artist, installation art bullshit. That's all. It was all like fucking Kenneth Anger and like I it was really frowned upon to even like bring up or try to like emulate Hollywood films in any way. They were really fucking discouraged it. They hated it because they're like, well, don't have dreams because none of that shit exists. That's not going to happen here. Like you should want to make hall walls installation art. And I'm like, no, what the fuck. So I don't know what the so I'm now I'm like 100% positive because Buffalo's miserable. That fucking school, the campus was huge, and only some of the buildings were connected. And you would walk across the campus, and the fucking wind. Oh my! I can just remember this like I was there. It's just like middle of winter, wind whipping through 40 miles an hour. It's like 5 fucking degrees, and it felt like the wind was cutting your face open. Like, I would walk and just fucking freeze, and I'd get in the building, and there's, like, snot coming out everywhere, my face is all fucking red. Like, I just walked across the fucking tundra, and I would walk across the thing, and I'd be like, I can't wait to get the fuck out of it. I gotta get out of the city. I can't take this fucking weather. It's so depressing. It was horrible. But, so halfway through school, I'm driving home one day, out of the fucking blue, my father calls me, and he goes, I went to some obscure cousin of his funeral, and he's like, you know who I saw there was my cousin that I grew up with, and he was close with her, and she had moved to LA when she was like 20. He hadn't seen her in like fucking 20 years or something. So he runs into her at the funeral, and it turns out she lives out here and is married to like a pretty fucking, he did a lot of B-unit cinematography, but he did a couple really big movies, but he is like a famous fucking camera operator. I mean, he's worked. He was Vilmos Shigman's guy for 20 years. Operated on every from Spielberg's first fucking movie from Sugarland Express on. He was like a camera operator on Sugarland. Fucking. I mean, there's shots of him and Spielberg. Spielberg's like 20 fucking 4 years old, and him and Vilmos and sitting on a thing with Goldie Hawn. It's crazy. So crazy. So he's like, yeah, she's married to a fucking cinematographer. And she was like, oh my god. She's like, why didn't you tell me your fucking son was in, like, you know what we could do for him? Like, Tim, come out tomorrow. Like, we'll fucking put him to work. And I was just like, dude, like, my life changed from, like, 1 minute to the next. I was like, I hit, like, the genetic lotto. I was like, what? He's like, yeah. He's like, don't worry about anything. Like, you're fucking, you're all set. And I was like, Jesus fucking. I still remember, like, pulling over, and I'm, like, trying to explain it to, like, my really dumb girlfriend that didn't care about anything of, like, the arts or anything. She was just a total just work and go home and have a couple beers, watch the Sabres game.
What was her major?
She didn't go to college. She never went. She was a sweetheart, but she was a fucking just a. I don't know what I was doing with her. She was just so boring. Just said nothing. She was so boring. God, Dad. No, she just had nothing going on. She just had no like passion for anything really. She just was like a regular, you know, like most people there.
Damn.
That I couldn't relate to.
It was your dad then. It was your dad's cousin that.
Yeah.
So do you think that he consciously spoke up like, hey, my son's...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When she told him that, he's like, oh, my God, my kids... Because they were, like, pretty close, even though they hadn't seen each other in a long time. When they were growing up, they were close. So I still had, like, a year and a half or something of school left, and I was just like, holy shit. And he's like, yeah, well, he's like, I'm mostly retired. My son works now. He's like, yeah, he's working on... What was he working on? It was, like, A Man on Fire. Because they were Tony Scott. Tony Scott was, like... Later on, they hooked up with Tony Scott from minute one. I mean, they did Top Gun all the way. They were, like, family friends with him. I mean, they were close fucking friends with him. Like, really close. So when he died, it was... Dude, we did the last thing Tony Scott ever did. It was a Sprite commercial. It was our cameras. My boss pulled focus on it. And, like, a week later, he fucking died. They shot at the Play... I was supposed to go to the Playboy Mansion to bring him some gear. But there was a fucking tiger. Fucking tigers! There was a tiger on set, and they closed the set off. They wouldn't let anyone out. Because the tiger was getting hyphy. So they were like, no unneeded personnel on set. I was literally on my fucking way with a lens to see him and Tony, who I only met once when I first moved here. I met him on the set of Domino. But
how was he?
Fucking awesome. Dude, he's crazy. He's you think I'm manic? You should see this guy's fucking energy. He sits like, he's always got a cigar, and he's got two director's monitor, and his legs go a mile a minute, and he watches the screen, and he's like, and like when a scene's going good, he goes, he starts hopping in the fucking chair, and he puts his hand in the air, and he's like, he's fucking crazy, dude. He's crazy. That's he's so awesome, fucking bro. Awesome. Yeah, he was so nice. And then I was only in LA like a week. I guess we're jumping ahead here, but so I go to meet my fucking boss. I go to meet him, and they take me to set downtown. And I've never seen like anyone. The most famous person I saw was when I went to New York City the first time. We wandered into a sci-fi convention at Madison Square Garden, and Billy Dee Williams is in there, and who was a fucking prick. What a miserable man. Oh my God, he's a fucking
really?
Yeah, happened? and Rutger Hauer and what's his Willow the midget.
Warwick Davis,
yeah. I was like, oh, Warwick Davis. He's like walked by, he's like fucking as high as my knee. Yeah. I think that was it. Yeah, there's only people. Oh, and Burt Ward was there too. Burt Ward. Batman. Yeah. It was like 2000. No, it was 2002. That's when I went. But so I never seen anybody, and I'm like, I'm walking the fucking set. I park on like it's a Hope and Spring or something downtown streets, and I park and I'm walking. Someone's like over my shoulder, and I'm like, someone's walking next to me, and it was like a fucking girl, and I was like, ooh, who's this? And it was like Mina Savari. I was like, it's fucking Mina Savari. It's just me and her just walking up the street like on the way to set because she was in it, and I walk into the. I still haven't seen him since in all the years I've lived here. But I go to walk in the lot where all they're filming, and I almost walk right into fucking Christopher Walken. I'm like, fucking Christopher Walken, holy fucking shit. Dude, he looks so old. He looks so fucking old in person. He's tall as fuck. He's a big dude, and his face is all sucked in. I'm like, oh my God, it's like a mummy. And that was 2004. Yeah, I couldn't believe how old he looked. I'm just like, holy shit. And I cut more steps. Like, there's Mickey Rourke. I'm just like, holy fucking shit. I'm like losing my mind.
Damn.
So he takes me over, and he's like, you want to meet Tony? And I was like, fucking love Tony Scott. So he takes me over to meet him. He's like, I think at the time I was like, I wanted to be like a, I didn't know what I wanted because they worked in camera. I was obviously going to get into camera, but they're like, what? They're like, he's like, oh, this is my nephew, cousin, whatever the fuck he is from Buffalo. He's a big fan of yours. He wants to meet you. I think he wants to be a director. He's like, Tony Scott grabs the bullhorn. He goes, oh, everybody, I fucking quit. I'm leaving. He's like, Luke is going to be a director. He's taking over the movie. I don't want to fucking do this shit anymore. And he's fucking just hands me the bullhorn and like fake walked away. He's like, how's it going? How nice to meet you. He's like, you want to hang out with Tony back here by the monitors? And I was like, yeah, I fucking do. Yes. So I'm losing my fucking mind.
So
there's like five cameras filming all over the place.
In Buffalo's fucking beating your ass off with you. chick that's yep. boring, and then you're fucking...
Well, she moved out here with me. That was a fucking big mistake.
Ooh, fuck. So she...
yeah. But then she moved... that's a whole other fucking story. But yeah, at the time, she moved out here. She hated it. She never liked it. She was homesick from like minute one. It was
How long did it last?
I was with her... I think she was out here 3 years with me. Yeah. Then she moved home. But the whole last year was just like a mess. And I was fucking...
Okay, Tony Scott.
Yeah, so we're sitting there, and the first fucking take... I don't know why, but the guy... Now, obviously, you see the movie now, but at the time, like, the guys from 90210 were there. Fucking, what's his name? Brian Austin Green and the other guy, Ian Ziering, were in... I'm like, they're in this fucking movie, but they're playing themselves. It was weird. I was like, what are they... So they're in the scene with Mickey Rourke, and... there's just cameras everywhere. There's like five, because all of his movies have like nine fucking cameras rolling at once all over five different fucking film stocks. At the time, it was Dan Mandel, who later did Star Wars. But I'm standing right behind him at the monitors, and they're rolling. And I don't know what's going on, but they're talking. And Mickey Rourke just starts fucking stomping. Like, they were sitting in actual director's chairs, because in the scene, they're like interviewing him. And he starts stomping on this fucking Apple box with his boot. And then he picks it up and starts fucking smashing it. And Tony goes, oh, fuck, oh, shit, oh shit. I don't know what pissed him off, but like Mickey Rourke had this fucking meltdown on the set. And he goes, motherfucker. And he grabs his coffee and he smashes his coffee. And coffee came sprinkling down everywhere. It was like all over me. I was like standing in like the rain of fucking Mickey Rourke's coffee. And Tony goes, oh, fuck, oh, shit. He's like the most profane man. Like, he makes me sound like a goddamn nun. He's like, fuck, shit, oh, fuck, motherfucker. And he goes running over and had to like... pull him aside and like assuage him. I don't know. I still don't know what he flipped out about, but he had a fucking meltdown. I was like, whoa, this is fucking crazy. Yeah.
So, yep. Oh, fuck.
And then I talked to him because he calmed down, and then he had that dog that he was always famous for.
Yeah.
And he was standing there with it, and I'm like, is that the fucking same dog from, because it wasn't that long before, since it was out. It was Once Upon a Time in Mexico. I'm like, is that the same dog you had Once Upon a Time? He's like, yeah, it's the same one, yeah. He's like, meet, and he made like the paw wave at me, whatever the fucking dog's name was. I was like, holy shit. Then he was super cool after that. But, yeah. Okay. That's that story.
So, how does that evolve into who you are now?
Well, so then I have a long story. Now, these guys that were supposed to hook me up, They're just you can't like nail them down. They're crazy fucking people, and they didn't really, the whole first year I was out here, they didn't get me on anything. This is why I was a fucking mailman in your neighborhood, delivered mail to this fucking building for like 7 months. I was a mailman, 6 months. Yeah, wow. Yeah, 6 months, because when my 6 month contract ended, for the last like fucking almost month, I was delivering mail. I would get off work and I would go work on Mission Impossible 3 with my boss. I was a camera PA. And they would shoot nights, and I would come out and just lug fucking gear around. After fucking walking around all day in 100-degree heat with a fucking 80-pound mail bag, I'd have to go to set and run shit around all night with fucking Tom Cruise fighting a machine gun in my face. And then I'd go to work the next day, they wouldn't believe me. I'd have like 2 hours of sleep. I'd just be like, hey, what's wrong with you? I was the only white guy at the fucking Sherman Oaks post office in like 2005. There was no fucking nobody. I mean, they're all super cool, but like, what's wrong with you? I say, you falling asleep, standing up? And I was like... Dude, I had like Tom Cruise firing a machine. He's like, yeah, you're so full of shit, dude. Fucking gringo. Get in the truck, you know, because they were like training me or whatever. But yeah, I was like falling asleep in the truck. Dude, it was brutal. The last like 3 weeks I was there, I was doing nights on the fucking movie and then I'm coming to fucking deliver mail. I was just throwing away like bundles of fucking like you have to go in these huge gang boxes and put all that, they called it DPS. It was all the bullshit you don't want, junk mail, like the fucking penny saver. I would throw away fucking bundles of that shit because like, it would cut like an hour off my route and I could sleep. And I don't know why the manager at that place, he just fucking loved me. I don't know what it was, but somebody called in and reported me.
You would throw away mail.
No, not mail.
But like,
junk mail. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Fucking tons of it. Everyone did, but I did. In the end, I just didn't give a shit. And I was about to get on the movie anyways. And I knew my 6 month thing was up. But somebody actually reported me, and like the manager guy like refused to fucking like hear it. He's like, "No, Luke would." He goes, "That must have been someone else. Luke would never do that." I was like, "Yeah, no, oh boy, no." That's a whole. I could do an hour on just a post office, dude. That shit was fucking insane. I don't know how anyone gets their mail. Sherman Oaks is the worst fucking mail district in the entire. I don't know. It was 10 years ago. The entire country,
dude. I'm just stunned because there's so much shit that I don't fucking know about you.
Yeah.
I never could have guessed that.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, that was a hell of a fucking... I'm telling you, I've done like everything. I've had a fuck of a time in 12 years out here, I'm telling you. This is a fucking insane... This city is insane, dude. This is a crazy fucking place
to
live.
You adapted to it.
I get, yeah, but now this is the result. Now I'm fucking just like, I'm crazy. I'm like the guy in Starship Troopers at the end. Remember, he's like, they eat their brains for that fucking captain after the bugs came. I'm that guy. I'm just like PTSD. LA PTSD.
Okay, so you get on the movie.
Yeah.
Was it Mission Impossible 3?
Yeah, Mission Impossible 3, yeah. So I went from fucking 16mm old news cameras at school. A year and a half later, I'm on a fucking J.J. Abrams movie. 35mm fucking cameras. Just like, it's just, I remember the first night I showed up, I'm just like, there's fucking Tom Cruise. There, he's like, he's fucking standing right there. It's fucking Tom Cruise. And I loved Tom Cruise too. It wasn't just like, he's a movie star. Like Magnolia was like, that was like a life-changing movie. That Magnolia is up there. That's in like my top five that really like made me obsessed with fucking film. I'm like, it's fucking Frank T.J. Mackey. But I didn't even know how to get the fucking, the earpiece, but I didn't even know how to get the walkie fucking thing in my, I didn't even know how to hook it up. I didn't know how to turn the walkie on. I didn't know like if you don't put the thing in right, it'll key the whole time and fuck up the whole camera. These are like professional camera guys that make like fucking $200,000 a year. And it's some asshole out of film school. They're like, ah, who's keying? And I'm like, what's keying? What does that mean? Like, unplug your fucking walkie. It was like this kind of shit. It was brutal. But, yeah, and that was film gear is fucking heavy, and that's all I did because there was sometimes it was a lot of location work like downtown, and it was film, it was 35mm film, so they'd have to park the camera truck like a block away from the fucking set sometimes, and you change the film mags in the darkroom on the truck, so I'd have to run these fucking film mags, just Panavision 35,000 foot fucking mags. The cases are like 40 pounds, and I'd have to grab two cases and just run them back and forth all fucking night. It was crazy, just sweat my balls off and shit. It was brutal. But,
had
oh, it was
be
brutal.
Better than fucking.
Oh, no, it was awesome. Like, I wasn't like, oh, this sucks, but it was awesome, it was fucking brutal. Hard.
Yeah.
I remember when we were filming. I don't know if I told you the story. We were shooting. There's a scene in Mission Impossible 3 where he meets because JJ loved fucking. He loves like British. Was the British? Oh no, he loved Shaun of the Dead. So he got what's his name? The guy that's in all the Star Trek. Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's explaining. There's this lab scene. And we shot it upstairs at this, I think it was the LA Times building downtown. So while we were filming upstairs, at the same time, fucking David Fincher was filming Zodiac downstairs. So we all had to share the parking lot. It was fucking cramped. There was still like way more production trucks I could handle. They were filming upstairs. We were filming downstairs or whatever, vice versa. And they were shooting on the fucking Viper cam that was Zodiac looks fucking great. I don't know what happened to that Viper. That Viper cam was around for like 3 years and it was just gone. Like they shot Miami Vice on it. Michael Mann was using it. He shot Collateral.
Say, that's
it was a sharp looking camera, but for I don't know, it just disappeared. But so we all had to come in the same part of the back of the building, and I'm at one point because it was a tight space and they could only use 400 foot mags, and so those only hold like maybe 1,000 foot mag holds 10. It's like 1,000 feet or was it 100 feet is a minute? Yeah, so 1,000 foot mag is about 10 minutes of footage.
Jesus,
400 foot mag is about 4. So we got into this, like, they started adding a little bit of all the dialogue, so it was only two cameras, so they're fucking rolling out. Like,
so you literally
I'm
are
running, dude, fucking, like, literally, like, they're waiting to reload for me. Wow. Like, that's the whole production's waiting on me. And I'm running back and forth, and I'm fucking sweating, and I had to run up these stairs. And at one point, I swear to God, for like 20 minutes, they're between setups on Zodiac, Robert Downey Jr. and Jake Gyllenhaal, they're standing outside the door fucking smoking. He's like a fucking chain smoker. And I ran past him so many fucking times. I think at one point I was stuck waiting for the door, and I'm standing next to Robert Downey Jr. and Jake Gyllenhaal, and Gyllenhaal goes, you know, if you could tell those guys to switch to film to digital, you won't have to fucking run like this. He's like, you don't see our camera guy running like this, do you? He's like, this kid's fucking working hard. He's like, nobody's helping you? And I was like, no. They're just like bullshitting with me. I was like, yeah, can you believe this? I'm like, dude, I can't wait to see Jarhead, because Jarhead was just about to come out. He's like, oh, thanks, man. Yeah, because I'm running past him. Every time I go downstairs, there's Robert Downey Jr. I'm like running fucking past him. It was nuts.
So you really are like the epitome though of learning on the job.
Yeah. Yeah, I got thrown right the fuck in. I mean I would if the guy that I mean I'm like grateful he got me on, but they didn't do a very good job really showing me. It was just too crazy to really be like, here's how you do this, like really proper. Like it was just kinda like yeah, don't it was more don't do. Like stuff you learn what not to do more than like I don't know. Yeah, it was tough. If it was the right guy, it would have been fine. But the guy that did it ultimately kind of
it's crazy.
It made it harder for me.
To go back to you, you kind of do like to throw your shit into stuff you might not be ready for.
Yeah.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. I got no choice. I got no choice.
She
I got no choice.
Abusive to the staff.
Bought me about a steak. It's like a piece of charcoal. You call those carrots? No, yeah, it's mostly I got no choice. It's like the only way I know how to do it, just like fucking jump in. Shit your pants, jump in and swim.
That's the interesting thing, though, is because you, like, I will sit in the back of any comedy shithole show or like a good show or something, and we'll shit on people,
yeah.
You and me, and we'll laugh, and then we'll fucking go up and we're like, well, here we go.
Yep. Yeah, you got it. It's the only way to deal with it. Yeah. It's like it's almost like gallows humor. It's just like,
so what is that then? Do you think that that's gallows humor? Would you qualify that as gallows humor?
No, I don't know. You're for the same way. I just notice stuff. I just notice every little fucking thing. So I nitpick everything. So anytime I'm watching somebody, even if it's a good nitpicking, I can't not like, even if no one's around, it's just an internal monologue running of just usually making fun of and being mean. You know what I think? I think it takes your yeah. No, but I think it takes your mind off it. I think it helps you. Like, I think it's a distraction. You know what I mean?
Do you ever get worried people are nitpicking you?
Yeah, fuck yes. Yeah, absolutely, constantly.
So okay,
almost to a fault because I'll address it on stage. I'm like, oh, I'm bombing right now. I suck. This is bullshit. Like, pretty bad. I have like no fucking confidence. Like, no one wants to hear that. It's like, dude, fucking was Ed Furlong saying American History X? Dude, you gotta fucking stand up for yourself.
Well, that's okay. So you continuously, and that's something that I feel like you continuously do.
Yeah.
Is kind of work your way up with these, you know, with these different fucking jobs you do. I mean, starting off as a PA that runs shit, now like you write.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to direct?
No, I want to write and produce. I can't direct. I suck at it. I'm too distracted. I can't. I don't think I can do it.
What
I don't
about act?
No, I tried. I was a theater minor in college. I was terrible. I was fucking terrible.
Well,
I was so fucking. I know, but it was a. We had like a really like respected. He ran the Irish Classical Theater. He was like. I love the guy. The acting teacher was fucking awesome. He was like from Ireland. He was like a real Irish like actor, like fucking hardcore actor kind of guy. He was great. He was cool though. He wasn't like a dick or anything. And he was very like. He knew, we were all beginning students, so he was like pretty. I don't know, easy with us, but. I just, like, live theater, it was just, like, that silence and, like, having to go through a, oh, my God, I could not do it. I would get so, I'd swallow, like, 15 times, like, hey. How's it going? Like, my voice would go up 2 octaves. Oh, it was horrible. That's why I don't know how I ever got into stand-up, because I so fucking hate public speaking.
That's my next question, is, during all of this shit,
yeah,
where the fuck does stand-up come into your life?
Well, it was all the years growing up listening to fucking ONA, like religiously. I never fucking missed. I was obsessed with that fucking show, and I got into so many comics from it. Even, I mean, like how long did I'm assuming you've listened to it, like for like back in the early 2000s, even.
Yeah,
how we knew Bill Burr like way before everybody. Like, no one knew. I would always talk about him, and no one knew the fucking. I was like a household name. Remember when Bill Burr was like nobody? He was like Jimmy's buddy that would stop by sometimes.
I remember watching. I remember watching fucking Marc Maron.
Yeah.
When this was before he had the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself,
like, would you see him in New York?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, this guy's hilarious. He cracks me up. I like the angle that he would approach shit at. Like, just the. It was very pessimistic, yet. Like, it was back when he was doing bits about his inner Jill, he used to say.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I think my inner child is a fucking girl.
Oh, really?
It was a good bit. But like comics like him, I remember watching like even fucking like Joe DeRosa.
Yeah. You know, I love fucking like DeRosa back in the day.
So that was a lot of too, was like just finding out about these different comics and
yeah.
Fucking I don't think that anybody would have known about fucking
Louis.
Otto and George.
Oh, him too, yeah.
Cause I don't think people would have fucking known about it had it not been for ONA.
Yeah. He was on Howard too though, wasn't he?
I
know he was on at least once. I know he was on at least one time, but I don't know if that was a result of ONA. I don't know.
So,
but no, you're right, definitely.
It was one of those situations to ONA where it was just, yeah, it did connect you. So is that what it did for you then?
Yes.
Because it's one thing, though, to connect you with like a lot of comics and shit, but the other thing that you have to take in mind is, yeah, what made you cross the bridge from wanting to watch it to...
I like the idea, like, they would talk about all those guys hanging out in the cellar and shit like that, and I was like, that would be so fucking cool to have, like, comic friends like that, and, like, I don't know, their whole, like, that whole, like, part of their life, like, the whole community part of it really, I thought was fucking really cool and, like, interested me, and, like, I don't know, then when they would start talking, I like creative, like, mechanics, that's why I can watch, like, an Eagles documentary, even though I fucking hate them, because I love seeing like what goes into making like any kind of like I guess you'd call it art, like music, anything. I like people's process mind shit always interested me for some fucking reason. I honestly think it goes back to my father saying, look at that terrible acting in Jaws 4. I swear. That's like where it started. That's like my earliest memory of that.
Yeah, you took notice of it.
Yeah. So anytime somebody makes something creative, I'm like, what the fuck made him do that? So like they would talk all kinds of behind the scenes shit on the show. And I got into the whole like the whole culture of it like kind of interested me. But I was just terrified of public speaking. So I think the first time when I, this sounds so stupid, people are like, what? But the first time I fucking love Funny People is my favorite Judd Apatow movie. That fucking era. A lot of people hate it. I loved it. But like, I don't know, just the same thing that Swingers made me want to be an actor at the time, because like, oh, you can be an actor and there's people that are like that are just not like losers, but like are nobodies just grinding it out. And so that took away, like it demystified it for me a little bit. And I was like, yeah, regular people can just do this. And like some people fail and some people, I guess, work hard and don't get anywhere for like a long time.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was like a thing. I thought people just like, you were awesome immediately and that was it or something. So that like made it less scary. And then when I saw Funny People and I just watched that whole movie and I was like, there is regular guys out there that don't know what the fuck they're doing. And so it's like, I guess it's less scary to know that it goes on. I don't know. There was something about that click with me and I was like, I want to fucking try that. So the first time I ever did it was upstairs at the, hang on, let me fucking, hang on a second. I'll text this fucking, I would never do this, but this is like this fucking.
No. And you know what? Where are we? This might be a two-parter.
Thinking that, dude. I think we got another hour in this fucking thing. Shit.
Yeah. Well, do you want to, I'll tell you what, do you want to end on a good spot here? We'll do this. I'll ask you what your first set was.
Okay. Like,
and then we'll continue.
That's a goddamn good. You're fucking good at this. You're a good interviewer.
All right. So all right. What was your first set and what was it like going in there? Did you know about it? What the fuck?
All right, fucker. The first set, they had an open mic upstairs at the Rainbow Room where we used to always hang out. The famous Rainbow Room on Sunset. It's an old heavy metal. It's in all the old heavy metal videos, Guns N' Roses and shit. It's a really fucking famous old rock bar. But so upstairs where it's like built like a pirate ship, they have a fucking open mic up there. And I don't know. I think it was sometime, it was like a few months after I seen Stupid Funny People and I was talking about it forever. And like, just fucking do it. Because my whole life, everyone's like, dude, you're funny. You should be a stand-up. Because I was always like a funny guy. Like I would destroy like rooms of like my friends or like at work and shit. Like when I used to work at Panavision and that fucking, I don't know, that's a whole story. But like I would always make people laugh really easy and I was like good at it. So I'm like, well, I got to be good at stand-up, right? I mean, this must be fucking, this is going to be a fucking walk in the park. Oh, boy.
Did you write jokes and shit for it?
Yeah, I wrote a set. I wrote like a 3-minute set or something, 3 or 4 minutes. And like it could not have gone any worse. Okay, the setup, and if anyone's ever been up in the upstairs room at the Rainbow Room, because there's like 3 fucking bars in this building. And so there's like a fucking, it's like a pirate ship, but like there's a dance floor, but you have to go down these like stairs to get on the dance floor. It's by itself and it's almost in a, and there's these like, there's these big pillars that separate the rooms. So like, the place, I say like way too much. So the place I was going down to do it, it was like down these stairs and then you had to kind of look through like a little half wall to see me. It was horrible. There wasn't like a stage. Everyone else did it right in the room, but if you did it in the room, you were like right in front of the people's face in the bar. It was either this little bar area or this little kind of little downstairs thing. So I went down there and like the mic was cutting out. And like my, it was so bad. Like my voice is 3. I was like, so guys, I was in Ralph's the other day. And I go, when I see this guy walking, it was so bad.
What was your first joke?
I don't remember. I can't remember. It was, I know what there was something about that. Oh God, it's so fucking bad. And the sad part is this would be like, it wouldn't feel as bad if it was 20 years ago. I was talking, but this is like only like 4 or 5 years ago. there was some bit in there about that, like, oh God, something about Boba Fett. If he took the helmet off, it would be Lemmy, because Lemmy hung out at the fucking Rainbow Room. Something like that. And I thought it was so clever. I'm like, that's fucking gonna kill. And everyone was just like, not even if they could have heard me, I could have had perfect elocution and a fucking sound system like Wembley Stadium. Everyone's doing it. I'm like, oh God, it was so fucking bad. Oh God, oh my God. Thinking back on that one, ooh, it was bad.
So did like you have friends and coworkers?
Yeah, all my friends. I remember they were so. Everyone was so disappointed. Everyone was so excited. They're like 10 of my friends because they couldn't believe it. They're like, oh my God, you're going to fucking, dude, you're so funny. You're going to do stand up. Oh, you're going to be like the fucking next Chris Rock, dude. You're a funny motherfucker. And all, they were just like, Everyone was just like a fucking, they just saw a car accident. I did so bad. Oh, dude, it was awful. I was like, oh my God. Oh, just my hands were all shaking and shit. Jesus Christ, that was bad. And then to make it worse, it was like a Wednesday night. And there's these two like miners or lumberjacks from Portland. On vacation, they knew that because they announced that to everyone in earshot. Ah, we're from Portland, we're lumberjacks. And they were fucking wasted, and they heckled every fucking, just screamed through everyone's set. It was this weird, like, torture. Like, they would yell over your whole set, and they would ruin your set. And then you come up, and be like, you did fucking great, man. And then they'd buy you shots and drinks. They did this to everybody. I'm like, what kind of fucking sick game? What are you doing here? Like, do you think you're helping? I don't know. Because in the end, they were kind of nice guys. I think they were just, like, trying to have fun, but they were just, like, super dumb, like, working Joes that had no idea how, like, stand-up work. Because we were, like, not professional comics. It was a fucking disaster. It was horrible. I'm like, oh, there goes that.
So that was your first gig.
That was my first one, yeah. And then I can't remember. What was that, 2012? And then that was the Marty's open mic days where I'd only go to Marty's. You ever been there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that fucking insane. That was, dude, when it was brand new, I was there, like, the second day. My picture's still hanging up in there in Marty's.
Are you serious?
Yeah, my picture. I was like the second day it was open. I was one of the first people to ever fucking do stand-up there. I have a weird neck with that. I was the same with Fourth Wall. Was there, I think, the second night it was ever up?
Yeah, I hosted the first night Fourth Wall ever opened, I was hosting it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was the first night.
I think that was the second night.
Because I actually met you. Well, we'll save that for part two. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Why not?
And now we're first sponsors.
And then fucking something. Keep
when should we do it?
I don't know.
I just leave this here? I mean, I'm not going to use it. No one uses it again until Monday because my roommate does his fucking stupid podcast on it, but. Today's fucking Wednesday. I can do it. I can do it.
Wednesday?
Yeah.
All right. Well, join us the next time we fucking publish this shit. Yeah. We're going to do part two. In part two, I'm going to ask Luke. We'll give you a few fucking teasers. I want to ask him what he thinks his best set was, because I know what his best set was for me. I'll talk about how I met him, what I first thought about him when I met him.
Oh, shit. It's usually never good.
No, it was actually... Well, you'll okay, find right, it.
Yeah, I don't want to fuck it up. All right.
And then, I want to ask you something else, too, I was thinking of today. And I can't believe I didn't ask you this, so I'm going to ask you this next time. All right?
Okay.
All right, man. Everybody, right. Listen there at 405, Behind the Court people. Again, this is Luke Allen and me, Eric Rocha. We're here just shooting the shit, learning some stuff about my buddy Luke Allen. This has been really fucking... This has been informative for, I think, anybody that fucking knows you.
Yeah, nobody. People usually want to know less about me, so this is different. I'm not used to this.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyways, we'll catch you next episode, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks.